1 Samuel 27. How many different themes did you find in these four chapters as you studied it? We kind of covered at least four different things, maybe even up to six, I would say. But you know, as we cover in this Sunday school class, it's paced in such a way that we'll be able to fill our Sunday school hour. Sometimes, you know, if there's not enough scripture covered, you 15 minutes, you're done. And so we try to get enough information to cover the whole 45 minutes or so. Well, we begin in chapter 27. If we look back at where we were last week, David has spared Saul's life a second time. And Saul says, you know, I'm sorry, I'll leave you alone. But David, even with that, and we can see why David felt that way, because Saul had said that before. You know, and when it comes to forgiveness, think about it this way. How many of you ever had somebody say, I'm sorry, and then they did the same thing again anyway? Or they said, I won't do it again, and then they did it again anyway. And so here we are with David, and Saul says, well, I'm sorry, I won't do it again. And now he says it again, and David says, yeah, I don't know if that's true. So he left. And it says that he said in his heart, verse 1, chapter 27, I shall now perish one day by the hand of Saul. There's nothing better for me than that I should speedily escape into the land of the Philistines. Saul shall despair of me to seek me any more in any coast of Israel. So shall I escape out of his hand. So David rose and he passed over with the 600 men. Remember, these were the ones that nobody else wanted. The ones who felt like they had no one and nowhere to go. And so they joined themselves to David, and they are following him, and he goes. The Bible says in verse 3, he dwelt with Achish at Gath, he and his men, every man with his household. So not just the 600 men, but their families. And David with his two wives, Ahinoam the Jezreelitess, and Abigail the Carmelitess, Nabal's wife. And it was told Saul that David was fled to Gath, and he sought no more again for him. And that's important. That's the turning point. So David runs away in fear. But how many of us have realized that all the worrying we do, most of the time, the fear that we had was misplaced anyway? And we fear these things and we worry about these things and they don't even happen. You know, and that's what we face here. And so David ran away because he was worried, but Saul never came after him again. Verse 5, David said to Achish, if I have now found grace in thine eyes, let them give me a place in some town in the country that I may dwell there, for why should thy servant dwell in the royal city with thee? So David's desire is what? To have his own place with his people, not to intermingle, not to interfere, and most especially not to be feared by another king. The last thing he needs is somebody else being suspicious of him. And so he says, I just give me a place out here, just land where I can live. Verse 6, Achish gave him Ziklag that day, wherefore Ziklag pertaineth to the kings of Judah unto this day. And so then David, you know, goes about his life. But what happened is, Saul has, now we shift from David back to Saul for chapter 28. And verse 3 says Samuel was dead, the prophet Samuel. So his entire life has been spent living for God, serving the people of Israel, serving the purpose and the mission of God. He has anointed not only Saul, but David. He was discouraged in the idea that the people no longer wanted a spiritual leader, but they wanted a military leader. That's what they said. We want a king that can go out and fight for us. And so there he was disappointed and discouraged by that, and he just really was heartbroken over Saul being taken away. It just seemed like a, you know, it just never stopped in the disappointments in the end of Samuel's life. But now he's passed on. And then the Philistines, verse 4, gathered themselves together. And Saul gathered all Israel together. So now we're going to battle. Verse 5, when Saul saw the host of the Philistines, he was afraid. What made him afraid? What was it? The size of the opponent. You know, sometimes what we see is so overwhelming, it looks so big that that we give up. We get distressed in our heart. And so Saul inquired of the Lord, verse 6, and the Lord answered him not. How many of us has that ever happened to? We go to pray and it's like there's no answer. We look to God and we don't sense his presence. We don't feel his presence. We don't understand his desire, his will, his mission. And we just, we can feel the separation. And I'm sure all of us, or maybe not, have felt the separation from God, like he's not around us, like he's not near. And that's what Saul experienced. And even when he had the prophets pray, God didn't answer them. And so Saul's at a loss. I mean, what do you do when God doesn't answer you? And when you've walked with God and you've understood the will of God, spoken to your heart by the Spirit, you might call it the unction of God or the wooing of God. And so when you don't feel that presence of God, the absence is large. And it's oppressive. Like a lost man wandering in the desert. And so Saul, what does he do? Verse 7, Saul said unto his servant, seek me a woman that hath a familiar spirit. So he goes to a witch, somebody who speaks to the dead. And, you know, it's interesting that people don't recognize that this is in the Bible. And this account, even some people in churches, pastors, will try to explain this away. Let me assure you of this, that there are people who communicate with the other side. And understand that when they do that, they're opening themselves up. I read a testimony this week, maybe you read it too, of a woman who was in that. And she said it was leading her down a dark path. She was, you know, basically worshiping the devil. And in the end, she found Christ. And so, anyway, Saul disguised himself, verse 8. He put on another raiment, and two men with him. They came to that woman by night. Why? Because Saul had made a law that said, we're not going to have any witchcraft, none of that stuff going on, none of that black magic stuff, none of that in the land. Verse 9, no wizards, none of those who have familiar spirits, none of that. And so Saul disguised himself. He goes to the witch at Endor, as we call her. And the woman said in verse 9, behold, thou knowest that what Saul hath done, how he cut off those that have familiar spirits and the wizards out of the land. Wherefore then layest thou a snare for my life to cause me to die? I mean, you're the one that made the law. Of course, she doesn't recognize him yet. And you want me to do that, even though it's against the law? I could lose my life. Verse 10, Saul sware to her, saying, as the Lord liveth, there shall no punishment happen to thee for this thing. Then said the woman, whom shall I bring up to thee? He said, bring me up Samuel. And when the woman saw Samuel, she cried. Okay, so let's remember this, okay? This is a vision that she has of Samuel coming up. And Saul doesn't see it. Verse 12, and the woman spake to Saul, saying, why hast thou deceived me? Thou art Saul. And the king said, be not afraid, for what sawest thou? You see, he didn't see it. What did you see? She said, I saw gods ascending out of the earth. And he said to her, verse 14, what form is he of? And she said, an old man cometh up. He is covered with a mantle. And Saul perceived, right? He understood that it was Samuel. He stooped with his face to the ground and bowed himself. And Samuel said to Saul, why hast thou disquieted me to bring me up? Right? Up from where? Abraham's bosom. And Saul answered, I am sore distressed. The Philistines make war against me, and God is departed from me. He answereth me no more, neither by prophets nor by dreams. Therefore I have called thee, that thou mayest make known to me what I shall do. Verse 16, then said Samuel, wherefore then dost thou ask of me? Seeing the Lord is departed from thee and is become thine enemy. And the Lord hath done to him as he spake by me. For the Lord hath rent the kingdom out of thine hand and given it to thy neighbor, even to David. So this is the confirmation. You know, there's been this suspicion in Saul's heart and this fear in Saul's heart. And now Samuel confirms it. David is the new king. It's going to happen. Verse 18, because thou obeyest not the voice of the Lord, nor executest his fierce wrath upon Amalek. Therefore hath the Lord done this thing to thee this day. Moreover, the Lord will also deliver Israel with thee into the hand of the Philistines. Tomorrow shalt thou and thy sons be with me. Hold on a second. Y'all following this? Y'all going to be with me. Where's that? Beyond the grave in the place called Abraham's bosom. The Lord also shall deliver the host of Israel into the hand of the Philistines. Then Saul fell straightway all along the earth and was sore afraid because of the words of Samuel. And there was no strength in him, for he had eaten no bread all the day nor all the night. So Samuel confirms all the fears that Saul had. And it's going to happen. When is it going to happen? He said, tomorrow it's going to happen. Saul's devastated. We looked at Nabal, you know, 2 weeks ago, and how that the news of David's intent to destroy him and Abigail's intervention, but just the fear of David, the Bible says it chilled his heart. You know, he just went cold, and he died 10 days later. But it struck him. That fear, that is a powerful force, and it will continue to be used as a weapon against all who will fall for it. A weapon by government, a weapon by Satan, a weapon by your enemies. Fear is a powerful weapon. And so Saul lays there and he's just limp. He's lifeless. But after some negotiation, he ate some food and went on his way. And so that would be the second lesson of the morning. Chapter 29, there's a problem because now David has joined with Achish and he's living in Ziklag, but he's going to battle with the Philistines as needed. But some of the lords or, you know, rulers of the different villages or sects of the Philistines are afraid of him. Again, there's that fear, 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 fear. David, you know, we begin this morning with David fearing Saul and then Saul fearing the Philistines and even the witch fearing Saul. And now we come to this part. And again, David is fighting with the Philistines. But some of those lords fear David. And it just, man, it messes everything up when we allow fear to control us. Verse 3 of chapter 29. Then said the princes of the Philistines, what do these Hebrews hear? Achish said to the princes of the Philistines, is not this David, the servant of Saul, the king of Israel? which hath been with me these days, these years? I have found no fault in him since he fell to me unto this day. The princes of the Philistines were wroth with him, and the princes of the Philistines said unto him, make this fellow return that he may go again to his place which thou hast appointed him, and let him not go down with us to battle, lest in the battle he be an adversary to us. Wherewith should he reconcile himself unto his master? Should it not be with the heads of these men? Who was the most famous Philistine in your mind? Goliath, right? They were on one side and Israel on the other side. David kills them. Now, we have to be honest. Isn't their suspicion of David kind of reasonable? I mean, he's been a warrior against them, and now all of a sudden he's fighting for us. All right, is this real? And Achish says, look, he's been living over here. He's one of us now. They say, well, get rid of him. We don't want him with us. And so what happens? Well, verse number 6, Achish called David and said to him, surely as the Lord liveth, thou hast been upright, thy going out, thy coming in with me and the host is good in my sight. I have not found evil in thee since the day of thy coming to me unto this day. Nevertheless, the Lord's favor thee not. You're not wanted. Wherefore now return and go in peace, thou, that thou displease not the lords of the Philistines. And David said to Achish, but what have I done? You know, sometimes it's not about what we've done, is it? Sometimes people's fears are just about them and not about us. And their suspicions are just about them and not about us. And their actions and their words and their attitudes, sometimes it's just about them and not about us. And we really need to be careful about allowing other people to determine our self-esteem and our courage. So, verse 9, Achish answered and said to David, I know thou art good in my sight as an angel of God. Notwithstanding, the princes of the Philistines said, he shall not go up with us to battle. Verse 11, so David and his men rose up early to depart in the morning, to return into the land of the Philistines, and the Philistines went up to Jezreel. It came to pass, when David and his men were come to Ziklag, on the third day the Amalekites had invaded the south, and Ziklag, and smitten Ziklag, and burned it with fire. So David was away with the Philistines when his village got conquered. Verse 2, they had taken women captives that were therein. They slew not any, either great or small, but carried them away and went on their way. Now, what does that tell you? They left the camp unsecure, didn't they? There was nobody back to protect the homeland because they had sent everybody away. And it's so important for us as Christians to be mindful that while spreading the gospel around the world is of utmost importance, if we don't have some strong churches back here and some evangelists back here, we're going to lose the ability to send missionaries anywhere else. We have got to think about the homeland. And you could transfer that into many other topics that we won't. But we've got to think about our homeland, America first. So David goes home, and what does he find? Well, he finds that nobody put up a fight. How do we know that? Because nobody got killed. Nobody was there to fight. Nobody was there to secure the land. And they've taken all of the children and all of the women and all of the stuff. They took everything. And they burned it with fire. Verse number 3, David and his men came to the city. Behold, it was burned with fire. Their wives and their sons and their daughters were taken captive. David and the people that were with him lifted up their voice and wept until they had no more power to weep. That is one of the most powerful phrases to me in the whole Bible. Until they had no more power to weep. And I don't know if you've ever experienced that. I imagine many of us have. But just exhausted with our grief. And they experienced that. Verse 5, David's two wives were taken captives. Verse 6, David was greatly distressed. The people spake of stoning him. Why? Because it seems like we always got to find somebody to blame. Number one, David was a man on his own when all these people found him and decided they wanted to be part of his team. He didn't go looking for them. He didn't go asking them to join up. They came to him. And now that they've suffered a loss because, you know, they went off to battle. Of course, when they got there, they weren't welcome. But while they were gone, this happened to their town. And now they blame him. And you remember that little sign that sat on the desk in the Oval Office? The buck stops here. And that's what happened. Guys, when you are the leader, people tend to blame you when things go wrong. And so that's what happened to David. They wanted to kill him. Nobody's died yet, but they want to kill him. And they don't know this, by the way. You know, as far as they're concerned, you know, their women and children have maybe been killed. They just can't find them. And what they weren't considering is, and because we don't a lot of times, you know, whatever we're going through, we don't realize that David's going through it too. Instead of putting their arm around him and knowing that he's suffering the same way they are, they separate him from the group as the leader, and they say, it's your fault. Verse 6, last phrase, but David encouraged himself in the Lord his God. One of those powerful phrases. David encouraged himself in the Lord. Y'all ever complain? I was complaining the other day to myself, because that's who I complain to. And, you know, you ever, and you're justified in it, I think. Your feelings are accurate, Derek. You have a right to complain. You know, this is real. This is accurate. But then after I listened to myself complain, I realized how much I have to be thankful for, and I quit complaining. What did I do? I encouraged myself in the Lord. We've got to have this ability. If you don't have this ability, you've got to work it up. We've got to have the ability to encourage ourselves. Because at the end of the day, you're the only one who can. Well, everybody else might try. How many of you have ever had a friend try to encourage you, but they couldn't? Right? You were just in no condition to be encouraged. And we're the only ones who can do that. We have to open the door to encouragement. And once we've locked it up and said, look, I'm not ready for that yet. I don't want to be encouraged. I want to grieve a little bit longer. And that's okay. We are allowed to grieve. And we are allowed to be upset. But at some point, if we don't open that door, we're going to get deeper and deeper behind that door. And so David encouraged himself. He looked to God and he trusted in God. And there's that phrase, this too shall pass. On your best day, understand, this too shall pass. On your worst day, understand, this too shall pass. Well, you say, well, Pastor, the loss I've experienced is never coming back again. You're right. You're right. But that sense of grieving, that sense of loss, and the depth where it is now shall pass. There is a place of recovery and healing. David encouraged himself in the Lord. What did he do? He said, you know what I need to do? I need to pray. I appreciate the mindset, because when we do suffer loss, when we do have that grief, we can withdraw. But I appreciate the understanding and the wisdom in saying, you know what I need is to be with God's people, not isolated from God's people. I need to be with God's people. and come to church and be among your friends. And if you got to cry with us, cry with us. And if you got to yell at us, yell at us. I mean, but just don't isolate yourself. That's my prayer. David says, I got to pray. He says to the priest, bring me the prayer cloth, the priest's apron. Verse 8, David inquired of the Lord, saying, shall I pursue after this troop? Shall I overtake them? And God answered him, pursue, thou shalt surely overtake them, and without fail recover all. And, I mean, why was there a question, David? Of course you should pursue after them. No. Sometimes what's logical to us is the wrong thing. And David didn't rely on his instincts. He went to God and said, God, tell me what to do. Tell me if I will be successful. Never become so reliant on your wisdom and your experience and your instincts that you push God away. We need God's wisdom. How many of us have ever had our instincts and our wisdom lead us wrong? Yeah, I made the wrong decision. Why? Because we didn't talk to God. So David went, the 600 men with him. They came to the brook Besor. This is verse 9. Those that were left behind stayed. Verse 10, David pursued. He and 400 men, 200 abode behind. They were so faint, they could not go over the brook. 600 men, but 200 of them just, they were exhausted. They couldn't go anymore. Not that they didn't want to, but you've got, number one, the physical exhaustion, but on top of that, the emotional exhaustion. And they've just lost their will. They gave up. And so the 400 continue. They bring a young man to them. And he's an Egyptian, verse 11. They gave him some bread, and he did eat, and they made him drink some water. Verse 13, David said to him, whom belongest thou? And whence art thou? He said, I am a young man of Egypt, servant to an Amalekite. My master left me because 3 days ago I fell sick. Verse 14, we made an invasion upon the south of the Cherethites, upon the coast which belongs to Judah, upon the south of Caleb, we burned Ziklag with fire. David said to him, canst thou bring me down to this company? He said, swear to me by God that thou wilt neither kill me nor deliver me to the hands of my master. I'll bring thee down to this company. They found this young slave and strengthened him, and he said, I'll take you right to him, as long as you don't make me go back. And they found him, and what happened? In verse 17, it says, David smote them from the twilight to the evening of the next day. There escaped not a man, save 400 young men which rode upon camels and fled. By the way, who were these people? Who were they, the ones that had invaded Ziklag? Who were they? The Amalekites? I hear Egyptian, but that was the slave. They were the Amalekites. Go back to chapter 28, verse 18. Samuel says to Saul, because thou obeyest not the voice of the Lord, nor executest his fierce wrath upon Amalek. You follow me? If we would deal with these problems early, we don't have to deal with them over and over again. But the problem is, when we don't deal with it early, we don't eliminate the problem, then we have to deal with it over and over and over again. And that's why God would say, go in there and wipe out your enemies. Just wipe them out. But they didn't listen. And when it comes to sin, if we'll eliminate sin as soon as we turn to Christ and realize how detrimental sin is, and we're just done with it, we don't have to deal with it over and over again. But when we play with it and we entertain sin and we think we can just, you know, have small doses, we have to deal with it over and over again. So what happened? Well, they recovered everything. Verse 18, even his two wives. Verse 19, there was nothing lacking to them, neither small nor great, sons nor daughters, neither spoil nor anything that they had taken to them. David recovered all, just like God told him. And so they took everything, and they got back to the brook where the other 200 people were. And David said, hey, y'all get a share of this. And some of the ones in the group of 400 said, oh, no, they didn't go fight. They don't get anything. Okay, but let's remember something. That idea that all 600 ought to do all the same things is what got all 600 of them away from the village to begin with. They should have left 200 behind then and had a little more protection. But David said, we're not going to do that. Verse 24, who will hearken to you in this matter? But as is his part that goeth down to battle, so shall his part be that tarrieth by the stuff. So again, one of those ideas that we can't all do the same thing. And we have to have some back at home. We have to have some, you know, even in the church, and talk about the different ministries of the church or the different administrations of the church, we can't all do the same thing. So when we hear the preaching and we're, you know, say, well, I feel bad because I don't go to the choir. Well, if you can sing, come to the choir. But if it's not your thing, you shouldn't feel bad, right? And you say, well, I just wish I could teach. Okay, well, if that's your thing, then you could teach. But if it's not your thing, then don't worry about it. We all have different abilities in the Lord. And so some have to stay by the stuff. And it was so he made that a statute. That would be the rule. Finally, the last point to bring out here is that they took such a great spoil from the Amalekites that David even sent some of it back to Israel, back to his friends in Judah. He never forgot them, which obviously would make a difference going forward when he becomes the king. All right, questions, complaints? Let's take a break.